beer bike, more like bike bike, or so touted Rice University administration after they, to the surprise of many, successfully conducted a makeup beer bike race without any major hiccups. In other news, the Rockets Warriors series is starting to look like football. Jalen Green looks like Anthony Richardson the way he alternates between freaky athletic plays and generational fumbles, but football season must not be here quite yet because the entirety of the league is crammed into a street corner on Green Bay, Wisconsin for the NFL draft. That is, the entire NFL, except for Rice legend Luke McCaffrey, who was live in our studio. Those stories, plus I have appointed myself the Joe Lenardi of women's tennis. It's going to be a good one, folks, so grab your cheese curds, roll the music, and let's talk some ball.
This is K-True on 96.1 KTRU LP Houston and streaming live on your phone and on the web at ktru.org. Back to you, Ian.
Good morning, Houston. I'm Ian Kleppinger, and welcome back to Against the Grain on K-True 96.1 FM. This is the Rice University student-run radio show where we break down everything going on in the world of Rice athletics and the broader sports scene from across the city of Houston. You can listen to us every Saturday bright and early at 8 a.m. right here on K-True 96.1 FM, or stream all of our episodes anytime by searching for K-True Sports on iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Make sure you stay in the loop by going ahead and following us at ktrue.sports on Instagram and at K-True Sports on TikTok. Throughout the next hour, you'll be hearing from a whole team of students. I'll be getting us started with our first segment, Around the Hedges. Here at Rice University, it is common to say that the greater city of Houston is beyond the hedges. So to start off each episode of Against the Grain, we go around the hedges for a quick review of the biggest sports moments from the past week in Rice and the city of Houston. Huge week on the tennis courts of all places for the Rice University Owls. The Rice men's tennis team, who was the 5 seed in the American Athletic Conference tournament, won said tournament. They came back in the semifinals to beat nationally ranked number 23 and American Athletic Conference top seed South Florida 4-3. They won the double point in a match that was played by Tommy Slaplinski and Eduardo Moraes, who won 7-6, 9-7 in what their coach described as a marathon match. And they went on to win 3 of the 6 singles points to get the 4-3 victory. Kuzmenok, Slaplinski, and Kabir Kapasi won those matches 6-3, 7-5, 6-3, 7-6, and 5-7, 6-3, 7-6. So absolute dogfight all around from the Owls. Great match against South Florida to make it to the finals, where they then beat tournament host, the number 2 overall seed Memphis Tigers, 4-2. They won both doubles matches that finished. Kuzmenok Kapasi won singles. Santiago Navarro was able to clinch the final point as the last few games were going on. And Kabir Kapasi was named the tournament's most outstanding player after going 5-1 across his singles play throughout the tournament. The Owl men now are awaiting the results of the NCAA Men's Tennis Selection Show, which is live on NCAA and YouTube next Monday if you want to tune in and see how things turn out for the Owl men. If you're not familiar, it does work very similar to basketball and baseball, where they have a 64-team field. The conference tournaments get auto bids, so the Owl men are guaranteed a spot, and we're just going to see where they fall and what their future holds. On the women's side, things did not go quite as well, but still room for hope, though they were the number 2 overall seed, and they got bounced in the semis by the same aforementioned Memphis Tigers, who were the number 6 seed on the women's side. They lost 4-2, getting their only wins from Sara Orav and Nathessa Selvaraj on the singles side of the bracket. Rice is awaiting their postseason fate. They need an at-large bid, as I'd previously explained. They are 17-6, 5-1 in the conference on the season, and they won their first match, their quarterfinal against Tulane, in the conference tournament. According to the ITA, they are currently ranked 43rd in the country. There's a 64-team field with 32 automatic bids from conference champions. So if we do some bar napkin math and estimate that there are approximately 5 to 6 conference champions ranked ahead of the Owls, that means they would miss the tournament by about 4 to 5 spots if the tournament follows the ITA rankings in terms of resumes. So that would mean that right now your Owl women are a bubble team on the wrong side looking in. However, if conference tournament weekend crumbles a certain way and the rankings rearrange a little bit, I definitely think they have a shot to end up on the right side of the bubble, given my expansive knowledge of women's tennis. Moving on to beer bike slash bike bike, as was alluded to in the previous, as I previously mentioned, we finally have results. Took a hot second. On the original day, race day, the Hansen team won the alumni heat and Weiss won women's heat one. During the makeup bike bike race last Friday evening, Hansen won women's heat two and Will Rice won the men's heat in what was an absolute barn burner to the finish of club triathletes sprinting, weaving, drafting off each other. They were playing chess. Everybody else was playing checkers. If you were watching, you know, great stuff from the Will Rice and Hansen men. I believe Will Rice won by about a wheel length, just mad dash to the finish on the last curve. I don't think I've ever seen we're going to see a more interesting beer bike for quite a while, despite the fact that there were no spectators. If there had been spectators at that, that would have been absolutely electric. You could definitely argue that that was a fumble by university administration, missing out on such an electric event. On the NBA side, our only hometown professional team that's seeing major action right now, besides the Astros, the number two Rockets have started their what will hopefully become a playoff run. They're at an even 1-1 in their first round series with the number seven seed in the West, the Golden State Warriors, after the first two games have been played at home. They are now headed to Golden State for games 3 and 4. They dropped game 1 by 10 in a defensive struggle. Jalen Green made a lot of headlines by not playing super well, as some in our studio will be happy to point out. Şengün led the way for the Rockets with 26 points in that game, but Jalen Green had a revenge game in game 2, dropped 38. The Rockets won 109-94. Şengün had another great game with 17 points and 16 rebounds. Two big takeaways. One, Jalen Green could not be more inconsistent. I think which Jalen Green shows up is obviously going to be a huge factor for the Rockets. And Jimmy Butler was injured for the Warriors after colliding with Amen Thompson going for a rebound. The internet has differing opinions on if it was a dirty play by him or if he got shoved into Jimmy by Draymond. You can research that and make your own decisions. I saw arguments going both ways. But the Rockets are in playoff action. A lot of interesting stuff. We will break it down in a little bit. I believe we are now going to get into the NFL draft, which has been going on this weekend, and get you our exclusive interview with Luke McCaffrey, who was drafted in last year's NFL draft and has some unique insights.
Yes, we are talking NFL draft. As we are recording this, the first round happened last night with a couple of interesting moves taking place over the course of the night, most notably Shedeur Sanders dropping out or falling out of the first round. We will talk about that and more, but I guess just going around the table here as I'm joined by my colleagues, what are our thoughts on the draft? Anybody, go ahead and take it.
I thought the starting at the top of the draft, I thought we had some pretty predictable things happen besides obviously Jacksonville trading up. And I think that's something I wanted to get at is, do we really think that Jacksonville should have traded up to get Travis Hunter? And was it also worth it for the Browns to trade down and get more picks later?
We'll go on.
All right. I have a unique perspective on this. So I actually think it could be a win-win in the long run. So I think with Jacksonville, like, obviously, I think Hunter is one of the few, like, can't-miss prospects. Like, he is so good on both sides of the ball, and he's just such a special athlete that I think, like, the chances of him being bad are so slim. Like, I think, obviously, with the Jaguars getting him, it's – when you get the best player in the draft, like, it's hard to say that, you know.
Yeah, and I think the Jacksonville fit was so great for him because they needed a wide receiver and they needed a corner. And it also seems like from what he's saying and from what the reports are is that they're really going to let him do both.
Yeah.
Which I think that's really why you go get him. You don't get him to be a wide receiver and then sometimes sprinkle in a corner
or
do the other way.
Yeah. But I also think, like, honestly, you would not give up that much if you didn't think he was that special of a player and that, like, he could play both ways. And, like, for the Browns, like, this is a team that needs help everywhere, right? So, like, obviously someone like Travis Hunter could make an impact, but when you have so many holes on both sides of your roster, I think by getting, like, this amount of draft picks, you get a first next year that will probably end up being a high pick, because are the Jaguars going to be competitive next year? Probably not.
No.
So I think from that perspective, like, I actually do think it is a win-win because, you know, the Browns
they
really need to rebuild this team. Next year, you now have the capital if you're not in a position to take a quarterback high, you can definitely trade up. You're going to have multiple first-round picks next year. And for someone like the Jaguars, you get someone that has the chance to be, like, a top 10 player in the league.
What?
Well, I mean, whoa. I mean, like, okay. Like, going back to, like, your state on, like, how good Travis Hunter actually is, like, we agree that he's not, like, the best wide receiver or the best cornerback in the draft individually. I mean, he is a top five. He's a top five.
Like, you could absolutely make the argument he's the best wide receiver in the draft.
He is definitely not the best wide receiver.
You could absolutely make the argument. That's, like, actually an insane thing
to say.
Go on.
Absolutely not. Wasn't he, I know he was playing both, but didn't most people see him predominantly as a corner over a receiver?
Yeah, because positional value-wise, corner is a much higher value position.
No, it's not.
Than wide receiver? Yes, it is.
Now, in the NFL?
For high-end cornerbacks, there are significantly more high-end wide receivers than there are cornerbacks.
But that doesn't.
Right,
but I still think having a high end receiver is more
so much more
to your
important
team
than
having that high end corner.
Absolutely.
But I do see the point that there are the lack of like elite corners in the NFL. But I think the big question with Hunter is, do we really believe that he can do both consistently at an elite level in the same game?
I honestly don't know. And here's where I might give a hot take on this trade. I honestly think the Browns will come out winning.
Definitely.
Because I just, okay. And this is, you know, maybe the Texans fan and me hating, but I'm sorry. Trevor Lawrence was considered a generational talent and prospect coming out of Clemson. He got to Jacksonville, and I know injuries weren't on his side. I get that. But his career is like the outlook for his career is the lowest it's ever been. And he's been there, you know, a few years now. And it just doesn't look great. And, you know, Travis Hunter looks like a good kid, looks like he's going to work hard on both sides of the ball. But I just don't see how they make it work, especially with a guy like Liam Cohen, who has not made great impressions as the head coach already coming in from Tampa. And I just, yeah, Duval, yeah, whatever.
I mean, Travis Hunter looks happy to be there. Him with his fluorescent pink suit yesterday, dancing and all that. Like, I saw that in my reels this morning. He looks happy to be there, and that's especially when you want to see out of your draft pick. Like, I think that's
sure.
But I understand your point. Like, you think that he's gonna rot. Like, I've seen also reels where it's like who's gonna be throwing to him? Like, it's like it's like they're a little harsh.
And analysis, yeah.
But yeah, I can obviously see that the Browns definitely won this because now they have the 36th pick in addition to the
33rd. And Mason Graham is a good player. Like, he was one of the players that a lot of analysts were saying coming out of the draft was like one of the for sure, like I don't want to say like star players, but one of the best players in this draft was Mason Graham. And it's just because it's D tackle that's not as premium of a position anymore that people sort of overlooked it. But the Browns got more picks this year and in the future, got Mason Graham. You know, Brandon was saying that they needed to fill so many holes on the team. I think this is a good move for Cleveland, and we'll see if the risk pays off in Jacksonville. But I don't think it's as straightforward as you got the best player in the draft. Because I think it is complicated. If he's not the best receiver or the best corner, then what is he really? Like, the fact that he's utility, like, the fact he's not going to be Shohei Ohtani, I don't think. Like, that's very different baseball and football in this case.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because before Shohei came along, it was a non-starter, right? It was something that people were like, this would never happen. Like, I think he is such a freak athlete that it is just, like, one of those things where comparatively, like, you look at someone like Marvin Harrison Jr. last year as wide receiver. Like, athletically, you can make the argument that Travis Hunter is significantly more athletic than him.
Okay.
And obviously, it's different. Obviously, it's different.
Athleticism-wise, yeah, okay, maybe.
But, like, he's just such a special, like, once-in-a-generation generation prospect. I think taking a flyer on him is worth the risk.
Yeah, and I think, speaking of some of those potentially generational prospects, or maybe reaching on some overvalued players. The Raiders made a big move drafting Ashton Jeanty 6th overall. What do we kind of think of that? There was a lot of holes to fill with that Raiders roster, and is running back really something that they should have been targeting that early?
I mean, okay, like, there's always an argument that you shouldn't draft a running back that high. I know you say it yourself, Max. Personally, my dad's a Raiders fan. I think this is a good pick for them. Like, their running back room is, like, full of dust, you know?
It's
like, it's really bad. So I think it's like a decent pick for Pete Carroll to start off his tenure. Obviously, like, I think you got to take some sort of talent like that. I think it'll bring a lot more energy into the locker room. You're going to have a lot of faith in him. It's going to open up the game a little bit, hopefully make life on whoever their quarterback's going to be next year. But
yeah, No, 100%.
I mean, yeah. I mean, Geno Smith's going to need a little bit more help.
No, I agree. But I think in a talent that's so, like, it's lacking so much, like, star talent, you want to believe that Ashton Gentry is going to be one of those names that really makes an impact from day one. And I think it was very clear from reports that Pete Carroll wanted his guy. You know, you remember his years in Seattle using Marshawn Lynch to the degree that he used him. Getting Ashton Gentry is huge for that offense, especially when the Raiders, I think, did have the worst ranked, like, running offense or, like, yeah, running offense in the league last year. So I think it's probably a good move for them despite all the holes they can fill. You could probably take a running back in later rounds. It's a deep running back draft, but I think if they wanted their guy, sometimes you should just go get your guy and then just see where it takes you, which I guess while we're talking about, like, best player available, I know that some people are making noise of Tyler Warren sort of falling to Indy and making a big deal out of that. I know we have some people here who have opinions on Tyler Warren and whether or not that was the steal of the draft, as some people say.
Yeah, I think some people are calling it the steal of the draft, but I'm really just looking at not just Tyler Warren, but also Loveland getting drafted by the Bears. I do not see what we're doing drafting tight ends in the top 15 like this. Not everyone is Brock Bowers. There's a reason Brock Bowers was, like, a once in a generation type player. It's because they don't come around every year thinking that these guys just grow on trees and that we can take tight ends in the top 15 when you're, especially the Colts, when the roster is not that good and you don't have someone to get Tyler Warren the ball. I just don't see the value in getting someone like that. I think there was plenty of better options defensively and offensively on the board to build out a roster that has major, major holes, despite the fact that they weren't in the top 10 of the draft. And I really don't, I question the Bears as well on going after a tight end at number 10. I don't see the value in the position like that. Even with their receiver room, I still would rather get a receiver than a tight end that high. I'd rather go get O-line. I'd rather go get defense. I don't really see the point.
I don't know. I think it's important to note, like, schematically, like, he fits really well into, like, the scheme that Indianapolis runs. So I think it is, like, something to take into account. Like, I do see, like, the vision, but I also agree that, like, a tight end should not be taken that high.
Yeah. No, I think the fact that Brock Bowers was so impactful in his first season sort of, you know, people are sort of riding that high and they've got, like, sort of that, like, a recency bias on that. Let's move into some of the other, you know, big storylines. We talked about we mentioned Shedeur Sanders at the start. Should probably talk about, like, what happened with the quarterbacks. Obviously, Cam Ward going one, not really a surprise at that point. But Jackson Dart and Shedeur Sanders making the headlines after last night. Jackson Dart, of course, was selected by the Giants late in the first round. Traded up to the Texans pick, my Texans. Who traded down and got a couple of third-round picks. Decent haul and decent deal for both teams, I think. But, yeah, Shedeur Sanders, you know, falling out of the draft. You know, there were reports coming out that people interviewing him for different teams didn't love what they were getting from him, you know, that he seemed cocky, lazy, whatever you want to call it. And Jackson Dart, sort of like Zach Wilson, has sort of made, like, a big jump in the hype, you know, with his athleticism, you know. People talk about that throw against Duke in the bowl game, right? So how do we feel about these quarterback selections, or I guess non-selections?
So I'm honestly more shocked about the Jackson Dart thing than Shedeur falling. Like, with Shedeur, like, even before, like, the draft, there were reports, like you said, like, one of the AFC executives pre-draft said it was the worst formal interview he's ever had in his life.
That's crazy.
He was so entitled. He takes unnecessary sacks. He has horrible body language, and he blames his teammates. And then that the biggest thing is that he's just not good.
It's pretty telling, isn't it? That's, yeah, like, those are strong words, yeah, about a prospect coming
but
out of the
honestly
draft.
Like, the thing with Jackson Dart, like, honestly, I think the Giants front office had to have been on drugs. Like, this is, like, an insane, wow, pick. Insane pick.
I mean
within,
okay,
because, like, within the last, like, 3 weeks, he went from someone that was, like, a projected day two or day three guy,
yeah,
to being a top 25 pick is, like, insane.
Well, I think day three is completely disrespectful.
Yeah, yeah.
This guy was, I think, a solidified round two prospect early on. And
it's crazy.
As you go through the draft, obviously quarterbacks are going to slide up. And I actually appreciate,
like,
the
him
Giants.
Over Shedeur Sanders is, like, just, like,
But
it makes no sense. Like, if you want someone with the upside, why would you not take Jalen Milroe? Like, it's the exact. If your whole argument is someone that's athletic and, like, you know, has the tools to potentially be good, Jalen Milroe has by far the highest upside out of anyone in the
draft. I'll start with what the drafting Jackson Dart. I think their plan coming into the draft was to secure their pass rush and then trade up. I think their plan was to come get Jackson Dart at the end of the first round because there was a group of teams who were never going to draft the quarterback. And I think they executed that plan exactly how they wanted to. In terms of Shadur, I agree. I think Shadur is the better player. But I think their plan was, and they fell in love with Jackson Dart, so they were going to stick to that plan and not doubt what they were doing, which I absolutely respect. And then in terms of that upside, Jackson Dart has showed far more capability passing the ball in the pocket and out of it than Jalen Milroe has. Jalen Milroe isn't even a top five quarterback in this draft class. He's being hyped up because of his legs. And Jackson Dart has shown a lot of potential with his arm. And I believe developing behind Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston
with Brian Daboll at head coach
can be really, really good for him.
I think this is the type of move that's going to get every single person in the Giants front office fired.
I mean, as if they didn't think they were going to be fired anyway, right?
But it's so then what's the point? Like, what's the point of taking a flyer on a quarterback that's not going to play for 3 years?
I mean, I heard somewhere that it's like, draft the guy you want, and then you get fired. Okay, it's the next regime's problem. You know, it's like, I agree with what Max said. Like, if you have a plan, you stick to your guns and you go by that plan. And I respect that they did that. And honestly, I think we're sort of overlooking the fact that, like, for example, someone like, Giants drafted Daniel Jones and sort of threw him right in there relatively quickly, I believe. But he's going to have Jameis and Russ to learn from. Russ is a Super Bowl champion, and then Jameis is a great quarterback, great locker room presence to have in there, great mentors to have. And I think, obviously, Jackson Dart, you're banking on that potential. But
I think if you're going to go for potential, there are quarterbacks that have a higher floor than him. Like, his entire tenure at Ole Miss, he was the type of quarterback that would not win you games, he would lose them. Like, look at the game against University of Florida. He single-handedly almost lost them that game. Like, that is lit. His hands. It was a horrible game for him. He's
almost
inconsistent.
Lost the game,
he has a weak arm. He does.
A weak arm?
Yes. Yes, comparatively to other quarterbacks in the draft, he has a weak arm.
Jalen Milroe
not accurate.
Barn door from 5 feet away.
He's not accurate. Like, he takes unnecessary punishment. Like, it's just, I don't think a good
I think,
pick.
Like, Dart is similar in this draft to what we saw with Jordan Love in that, yes, he's not, like, a complete prospect, but I think with some development, he has plenty of tools to be successful in this league.
I think that's a good point, actually, and I think we look at it player like Jordan Love, he was drafted into a much more successful, reputable organization like the Packers. I wonder if the fact that it's the Giants maybe subconsciously makes us worry about what Jackson Dart is going to be able to do in the future going forward. But I think that's probably a good place to end on. You know, lots of interesting moves made in this draft, and we're going to see especially who my Texans pick at the start of the second round later tonight. As we transfer to the next part of our show, which I will have as soon as I pull up the document, we're going to move into the game, which, you know, on the topic of drafts, we will have a little bit of draft trivia. So I will kick it over to Brandon, who will be hosting this segment.
Yeah, so in this, we are doing the Who Am I NFL Draft Edition. So I will give my co-host three clues to guess an active NFL player together as a team. They are only allowed one guess per clue given. Each clue should make it easier to guess the player. If they don't have a guess after a clue, I will give them the next clue. Ideally, to keep it interesting for the audience, the team should discuss players out loud to take us through their thought process. At the end, if they have not guessed correctly after all three clues, I will reveal the player. So for our first clue, I was the second wide receiver taken in the 2020 NFL draft.
Can I be totally honest? I know who this is already. And it's not because I looked at it. I think I know who it is.
I mean, hit him with the guess. Also, you can think about it for a second.
Okay, yeah.
I'll buy some time. Brandon, you gave some awful takes in that last segment.
Bro,
that was actually absurd what you said about Jackson Dart. Oh my God. You said below average arm strength. Literally every draft profile has him as above average arm strength. Sitting behind a quarterback is a proven way to like improve a prospect's like chance of succeeding in the NFL. Like, this is a good situation for him. He is a good player. He's the all-time leading passer at Ole Miss. They were a top 15 team all year last year. Nah, no rebuttal
okay,
for you. That was straight cooked.
He also ran a one-read option. Okay?
Bro, like, bro. No. Who's the
we'll
player,
see.
Juju?
Hindsight will show.
I'm going with Jerry Jeudy because that was the year that that was a 2020 draft, you said. Three receivers were taking that draft. I think it's Jerry Jeudy.
That's correct.
Yeah. We're like that.
Okay.
Wait, who's the first receiver that year?
That was Henry Ruggs.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Okay. For player two, in the 2017 draft class, there were seven running backs from this class that ended up making Pro Bowls. This one never did.
Ooh.
This one, just that's all we know.
Any running back taken that didn't make the Pro Bowl.
2017.
What on earth?
Yeah. That was the Deshaun and Mahomes year.
Yeah.
Who won the Super Bowl that year?
Leonard Fournette was drafted. Pick. Yeah, so he made a Pro Bowl. Yeah.
Dude, I have no idea.
Okay, next clue.
This is diabolical.
Yeah, this is a crazy.
Okay, next clue.
Okay. Clue number two was that he was highly touted coming out of college after setting school single season records at an SEC school.
Okay, that's a good hit.
Ooh. Who was Alabama's running back that year? 2017.
Josh Jacobs was the year, I think, after that.
And he's made a Pro Bowl. So
when was TJ Yeldon?
That was way earlier.
It's not
TJ
Yeldon. No. Yeah. Oh, God. Well, who
could
else?
Be like a Tennessee running back?
Leonard Fournette played at LSU. Not LSU.
Like a Kentucky running back, like if he
like,
set the
was there
six,
anyone
set
coming
the
out
record,
of Georgia? Maybe
like
no.
Some bummies.
Oh, was this
is Sony Michelle? Sony
Michelle was that year, I think.
But is did this... he make a Pro Bowl?
No chance.
He was tough, bro. No.
He was tough this first year.
All my life, Sony Michelle was tough.
He was tough
six games.
He might have been an alternate for that first year, but he was dog water after that, though. So
he
I don't.
Never made a Pro Bowl. I say let it fly.
Okay, yeah.
Sony Michelle.
Nope.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. I thought I was cooking, bro.
Clue no, that was good.
Number three
no
is that
Sony
Michel Super Bowl.
Sony Michel has made a Pro Bowl.
That's a dog, Sony Michel.
I assumed that was probably his first year as an alternate. Okay.
That was definitely a special teams Pro Bowler. No okay. way, bro.
Clue number three. I won a Super Bowl, but not with the team that drafted me.
See, not Sony Michel,
gosh.
Then.
Yeah.
Okay, he won a Super Bowl. Okay, who are the Super Bowl champs after 2017?
Patriots, Chiefs.
Patriots.
Rams.
It's definitely not someone the Patriots drafted.
Chiefs.
It's not
CJ Clyde. Hunt. No, Clyde. Anderson was Clyde Edwards-Helaire drafted that year?
Yeah, LSU. That was 2020.
Ooh,
no, he was
later.
Okay,
he was on the Burrow team.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire was late. But SEC. Okay, so the Chiefs. It wasn't Clyde. It wasn't. They didn't win with Kareem Hunt, right? But he wasn't SEC.
No. Kareem Hunt was earlier though.
He was like a
Rams No. That was Kareem Hunt. No, Kareem Hunt made the Pro Bowl. Kareem Hunt has
made
a Pro
Bowl.
Yeah.
Who else? The Eagles won the Super Bowl. But what, ain't they have like LeGarrette
Blount
or something?
Did Miles Sanders come out of an SEC school?
I swear they
had
LeGarrette Blount. Miles Sanders SEC.
I think Miles Sanders is not a bad.
Did he come out of an SEC school? I don't know.
Bro, I could not tell you. Let's let that fly. We'll say Miles Sanders.
That's incorrect. I'll give you one more hint. I'll give you one more hint.
Come on.
You mentioned him.
Oh
wow!
Wait,
we've already mentioned this.
Yes,
mentioned
you mentioned him multiple times, actually.
Oh no!
Are we bots?
Is it? It's not LeGarrette Blount. Kareem Hunt for sure made
a Pro
Bowl.
I swear he went to Toledo.
Bro. He had to have made a Pro Bowl. Oh yeah,
it is. That's someone that you said made a Pro Bowl that in fact did not make a Pro Bowl.
Is it Kareem Hunt?
Wait, we're bots.
Did Kareem Hunt go to an SEC school?
No.
Okay,
no.
It is not Kareem Hunt. It was Leonard Fournette.
What? He hasn't made a Pro Bowl?
Yeah. The original clue number one for that was that he was the first running back drafted in the 2017 class, which would have been way
too
easy.
Yeah, that would have given it.
No, that's actually criminal.
He was actually good.
Sony Michel has made a Pro Bowl, and Leonard Fournette hasn't. Pro Bowl voting needs to be overhauled, bro. This is insane.
Yeah,
okay.
That's wild.
Player number three. For the first clue, I was selected in the second round of the 2022 NFL draft.
That was the...
Okay.
Who was
that
draft?
What draft was that? That was the... I have no
Is that the
idea.
Jamar Chase year?
No, that was Burrow. Or no, yeah, that was the year. That was the Trevor Lawrence draft. That was 2021. So 2022 was
Guess I don't know.
Because that was a big QB year.
I think we move on.
Oh, 2022 was the Kenny Pickett year.
Bro, we're not
Kenny
getting
Pickett
a 1-32 poll.
Okay. Well, that was second. That was second round anyway.
He won the college football playoffs 2021.
Okay, this is a good hint. Alabama won that year, right? 2021. That was the last year
they
won.
Was that when Georgia whooped TCU though?
That was the year after.
No, that was 2022. Yeah,
that was Georgia. That was Georgia's year.
No, Georgia won
in 20. No, in 2021. No.
Belt to what? Belt to 2022 was Georgia.
Yeah.
2022. Well,
but it was a second round pick.
You said 2021, right?
2021.
Georgia won it in 2022 because they beat TCU, right?
Are we?
I don't know.
Okay.
Who was the team that beat TCU? That was our freshman year.
The team that won January 2021 was Alabama. Is that okay. Who we're saying the champion is?
Yeah. So this player was drafted in the second round.
Oh, is this hint cooked, bro? Can you just tell us, are they Alabama or Georgia?
Do we know?
Ask Chloe.
Chloe.
Georgia.
Georgia.
Okay. Georgia. Pick from Georgia.
Okay.
In 2022.
Hmm.
What?
Hmm.
Oh, no, yeah. 2022, because that happened in January, and then the draft and the... Yeah. Okay, yeah. Okay, 2022,
we
Georgia.
We might need another hint. I don't know.
Okay.
Second round. We don't have a position on this player.
Clue number three.
Like,
I'm known for being a hothead and have a knack for...
George Pickens.
Yeah, it's Pickens.
Yeah.
It is, in fact, George Pickens.
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
Wow, we probably should have got that earlier.
Well, we had no position for that.
When we knew Georgia, I feel like we should.
Georgia second round? Oh, probably.
Yeah, we probably should.
George Pickens. We weren't in our bag for that one, I fear.
Oh well. All right. It's time for a little PAA and promo. Who's reading this? Chloe, dude. Cook.
Thanks, Garrett. Our PAA is from the Houston Food Bank today. Around 1 million people in the 18 Southeast Texas counties served by the Houston Food Bank are considered food insecure, meaning they lack consistent access to enough nutritious food to fuel a healthy life. Since 1982, the Houston Food Bank has distributed food and other essentials to those in need through a network of more than 1,600 community partners. Whether it's food, money, or time, there are many ways to give to the Houston Food Bank and your neighbors. Find out how you can support a healthy community today by visiting HoustonFoodBank.org. And now for our promotion. Tune in Sunday nights at 8 p.m. for The Metal Show, K-True's home for death metal, grindcore, sludge, black metal, thrash, and more. And with that, I will throw it to Garrett, Fox, and Max to talk about some NBA.
It's time, y'all. We did a little playoff preview last week. Our predictions were not bad, actually. So far, we're somewhat on track with everything. But a lot has happened since then. First series, I want to talk about Knicks and Pistons. Who wants to talk about my glorious King Cade Cunningham? Because that boy is so tough.
Yeah, we can get a little bit of Cade Cunningham glaze. I think that the Pistons have actually been matching up pretty well with the Knicks. They've looked pretty good. You can definitely see, their lack of experience in the playoffs hurting them a lot.
Yeah.
Both of those games, in another world, the Pistons could be up 2-1 or even maybe 3-0. You never know.
I don't know.
But that's generous.
I think they've had some.
I think
some
the Knicks should have been. The Knicks should be up 3-0 right now.
3-0?
Yes.
I think it's been more competitive.
I think the story of this series is Cade is amazing and the Knicks are underperforming so laughably bad. It is awful.
I absolutely agree. I think they have this big five starting lineup and it's just at least two of them on every single night just are not showing up.
No, literally.
And it's what are we doing? Cade is great. I shouted him out on our playoff preview for chance at first team all NBA. He's wonderful. He looks great in the playoffs, but the Knicks, I feel like it's just more of a disappointment from the Knicks that's keeping this close.
Yeah, I think honestly Thibodeau should be gone after this year. That is my take on the series. He has done a horrible job. I mean, you watch their offense in these games. Like you said, Max, they have a big five. OG, Kat, Brunson, they should be able to do so many interesting things offensively, and yet I keep watching Kat catch the ball on the perimeter, shot fake, and drive at 3 miles an hour to the basket, and then ask for a foul call. This team is so uncreative. There's just so many ISO possessions, and so many times I just say, Brunson, please save us. The Knicks should be dominating the Pistons. The Pistons' second best player is Tobias Harris. Like, come on.
I think it comes down to how aggressive Cat wants to be. Like, I feel like Cat kind of has a reputation being a little bit of a softie. Like, he doesn't really play super hard. But, like, on his day, like, when he's actually focused and, like, locked in, Cat is an offensive demon. Like, this dude can give buckets to anyone. He can score. He can shoot. Like, I think if Cat is focused and staying aggressive, it'll make the Knicks a lot better. But it comes down to, like, how willing he is to actually, like, put in that work in the game.
But I also think part of relying on that is the problem. You should not be over-reliant on just Cat and Brunson to be ultra-aggressive to beat the Pistons when you have Mikal Bridges, OG Anunoby, and Josh Hart in your starting lineup.
That's the thing. I mean, I don't think they should be depending on Josh Hart that much for offense. But, like, OG was averaging 25 when Brunson was out for a little bit there at the end of the regular season, and now he's just not being implemented into the playoff offense at all. And same with Bridges, honestly. Like, Bridges has not looked that great in the series, really. Like, it's just frustrating. If I'm a Knicks fan right now, I am so disappointed with this team, and I'm looking at this as, yeah, we'll probably get out of this series, but there's no chance we beat the Cavs in the second round, or the Celtics in the second round, sorry. Disappointing. All right, let's go to the next one. Clippers up 2-1 on the Nuggets. At the time of recording, the Clippers just had a dominant Game 3 victory on the Nuggets. What are y'all's thoughts here?
I'm going to be honest. I'm kind of looking at Jokic right now. Like, we need some more shots. We got to take over. We cannot be letting Aaron Gordon shoot how many times. Like, Jamal Murray, we're not in the bubble anymore, bro. Like, pack it up. Jokic needs to get on the ball and make things happen. And I know, like, his supporting cast is not the best in the league, but I think it's enough that he can make do and he could win this series, but he needs to be more aggressive. Like, I'm pretty sure he's under his season average in, like, points, rebounds. He might be over an assist this series. Like, we need him to take over. We need some, like, 35-point triple-doubles. Like, I know that's crazy to ask, but that's the type of player Jokic is. Like, MVP-caliber player, one of the best of all time. Like, we need a takeover.
Yeah, I think, actually, to some of this role-player credit, I do think Jamal Murray, like, has played much better than he did in the regular season. But it's just the rest of these guys, like, they're not getting anything off the bench. And Westbrook, like, sure, he's had some big moments in this series, but shooting, like, 6 of 16 for 15 points, and then last night plays 9 minutes, goes 1 for 5, like, that's like, your best guy off the bench. And that's just not good enough.
Yeah, I know. They're living by the brick and dying by the brick right now. I completely agree. Like, this Nuggets supporting cast, Aaron Gordon has been really good, and Jamal Murray has been really good. But outside of those two and Jokic, you're getting literally zero from every
Michael
other player
Porter
on the court.
Has been awful.
Michael Porter Jr.
So bad.
Stats in the playoffs real quick. A guy whose literal only thing he can do on the court pretty much is score, and that's usually fine because he's a great scorer, a great shooter. Shooting 38% from the field, 33% from three, only giving you 8 points a game. That is awful. Like, this Nuggets supporting cast, I think, is really letting Jokic down. But at the same time, I think we need to credit the Clippers. This Clippers team, we talked about in the preview how they have the chance to be a very tough out in these playoffs. Like, obviously, you always have the question of Kawhi's health. Kawhi has looked awesome so far. He looked like a straight killer in game 2.
This is exactly how I imagined the Clippers looking in the playoffs. Like, they look really good. Harden's been great all year, even if people have been sleeping on him because everyone wants to question him in the playoffs. He's been great. He's continuing to prove that. I thought he's had some down quarters, some down moments, but he's responded really well, and that's something I think is really important. That you don't want to have these Harden games of where he's just turning it over and taking dumb shots. And if you can survive those minutes and he can respond, like, this Clippers team is legit.
Yeah, I think the ceiling for this Clippers team is honestly pretty high. Like, I think we're all kind of in agreement after game 3. We see the Clippers making it out of the series. I think this is a tough matchup for the Thunder, actually, when you look at this team in its entirety and, like, what their strengths are. Like, Kawhi is the ultimate tough bucket getter. I don't see J-Dub or Dort slowing him down that much. And then the weakness, like, the calling card weakness for the Thunder has always been, like, dominant big men. Zubac looks great right now. Not just, like, we thought he might have been a regular season demon. He's been good in the playoffs, too.
Yeah, he's looked really nice. Him and Norm Powell as well. Buckets per usual. Like, the Clippers are going to be tough to beat, especially if the Thunder don't pick up from what we've kind of been seeing their series with the Grizzlies so far.
They won the first
let's
two games.
Let's go to that series.
Last night, they were killing, but I'm sorry. Like, I don't think you're going to beat the Clippers by 40 if Shea's still shooting like 35% from the field. Like, they need full performance.
Okay,
Shea.
One down game for Shea. Dude,
no, the whole series, he hasn't been scoring well.
Bro, come on. It's not that. I don't think you can 3-0. Learn.
They won by 50 and then by like 20 again. Then they came back from down 29.
I don't see how you like can keep your foot on. I honestly respect the so-called struggle you're pointing out here, Fox. If you're the best player on your team and you're just effortlessly cooking these dudes, I don't see how you'd be that locked in.
Are
it's
we
so simple.
Effortlessly cooking 24 points per game on 25% from three?
The team is winning by 50. Like, you're going out there and you're watching your teammates straight fry them. I would not feel that pressed
either.
I've
honestly been more confident in the Thunder after watching these past three games because I've seen all the other guys step up and do it.
But I'm saying if Shea doesn't get back to, like, the level we know, what is the Thunder's, like, can they win the chip if Shea's playing like this?
He's going to get back to the level we know. Shea is too good. He's not going to, like, have a weak series against anyone, especially the Clippers.
He's
like,
having a weak series right now.
Bro,
they won by 50.
It's 3-0. Okay, 3-0. I mean, when he's there, he's gonna need to be there. Let's move on. Okay, this to me, Max, you said before our playoff preview, you thought this was arguably the least interesting series outside of like Thunder Cavs Celtics matchups. The Lakers Wolves 1-1. The Wolves looked awesome in game one, and then the Lakers kind of punched them in the mouth in the start of the first half of game two, and you saw the Wolves slowly fight back, and the Lakers just kind of held on. What are your thoughts on this series so far?
I mean, I got to give the Wolves credit. I didn't give them any credit, especially prior to the series. But watching that game too, it was sloppy, low-level basketball. I was unimpressed by both the Lakers and the Wolves in that game. It wasn't entertaining. It wasn't good basketball. You can credit the defenses, but it was just like there was a lot of just genuinely bad offense. And looking forward into this deeper into the series, I'm still confident in the Lakers to get it done, but I'm really not confident anymore, like looking at how badly they've played, in them getting past a healthy Warriors or a healthy Rockets team in the next round.
Yeah, I still am holding out a lot of hope for the Lakers. I think we just haven't seen a great game from the big three of Reeves, Braun, and Luka overlap yet. Like they've looked poor offensively so far. But their defense has looked like it looked really good against game two and like shutting down Anthony Edwards and pretty much making him and Randall beat them as scorers and holding them to 85. Like I think Luka, LeBron, and Reeves are just too good. They're going to figure this out offensively and hopefully get something from the other guys. I still think the Lakers could beat the Rockets, but it's an interesting series. I'm really looking forward to game three. Real quick, one last thing before we move on. Rockets versus Warriors. Jimmy Butler goes down in game three with an injury. Fox, what's your outlook on the series with Jimmy possibly being out?
If Jimmy's not playing, I do like the Rockets to advance. I think before the series, I would have probably taken the Warriors in like six or seven games, but we kind of saw the Warriors without Jimmy. Like, all of the offensive pressure is on Curry, and the Rockets are a physical, tough team with a lot of defenders. Like, they're going to hit Curry hard. They're going to make everything difficult for him, and there's really no one else that can step up. And Jimmy's probably going to be out for game three, so it's probably looking
at
like a Rockets win.
Three.
And then if he continues to be out, like every game Jimmy's out, I'm going to be honest, I'm probably favoring the Rockets heavily.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Let's move on from basketball. One quick thing. Amen Thompson is not a dirty player. That was not an intentional hit. That Warriors
not
take
at all.
Is so lazy, especially when you have Draymond the Donkey Green on your team. I do not want to hear about it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is finally time. It is time for a mailbag segment. Yes, it is time. All you crayon eaters finally sent in some questions, and we are here to answer them with unparalleled ball knowledge, complete and utterly unbiased takes, as usual, and hopefully a little bit of entertainment value. If you're listening to this and think, maybe I want my questions answered by these titans of sports radio, I've got good news for you. You can email us at ktrusports@gmail.com. That's ktrusports@gmail.com. And we may just answer your questions on the show. Without further ado, let's get into some of these questions. I'll take the lead on the first one. This is from Elias Augustine. He said, "If Jokic, I don't know who this is. If Jokic leads his team to another ring, he'd be top five all time. Are we buying or selling this take? I am buying every piece of stock on this take. I think this is fire. Jokic is a three-time MVP already. He's probably not going to win it this year, even though he should. If he's a three-time MVP, two-time champ, two-time finals MVP. He is absolutely top five all time. This is one of the best offensive peaks we've ever seen from a player. This season is arguably the best offensive season in NBA history. Yeah, if Jokic wins another ring, he's top five all time.
All right, thank you, Garrett. William Rowley had some interesting baseball takes about Mike Trout. He says Mike Trout is the most underappreciated superstar in American sports history, and also says Mike Trout still has an MVP season in him if he doesn't get hurt. Brandon, what do you got? Are you buying or selling?
I'm buying this. I don't think it's crazy to say. You know, there's an argument to be made that, like, from 2010 basically to 2020, he was the best player in baseball. He won three MVPs, probably could have won five or six if we're being for real. In an 86 WAR. So
that's so much. That's
yeah,
so crazy.
Like it's like actually insane. And it's just been injuries that have plagued him. He's still one of the best players when he's healthy. Him being on the Angels, you know, has caused a lot of the stardom to not be put on him, which I think, like, honestly, if he was in any other sport, or honestly, if he was in a bigger market, like if he played for the Dodgers or the Yankees, he would absolutely be.
I was going to say,
like,
yeah,
a star.
If he had, like, played for a team that was, like, in the playoffs, yeah, like, do we like, even if it wasn't a big market team, like, if he had played for, like, the...
That's what's haunted him, is just the playoff success and not being in the playoffs. Like, that's, you know, like, it leads to a lot of people putting him on the back burner and not, like, paying attention to, like, being able to witness one of the greatest baseball players ever. And, like, in any other sport, he would have been a superstar.
I tend to agree. Great stuff from Brandon, buying that take from William. Ezekiel Arias says a take for us. He says winning the Champions League is harder than winning the World Cup. The soccer people in the room had quite a reaction to this one. Jacob, let's start with you. Are you buying or selling this take?
All right, Zeke, it's going to be a hard take right here. Like, it depends on perspective, but at the end of the day, I think I'm going to still have to sell this take. It's looking at it, you haven't had anyone win back-to-back World Cups since 1958 and 1962 with Brazil. Like, bro, like, come on. Like, that's my grandpa was, like, a kid at that time. So it's, like, it was a long time. It's, like, really hard to keep the same quality roster during those 4 years of downtime. And more recently, we had Real Madrid 3-peat from 2013 to 2016. So it's obviously doable to, like, keep on winning in the Champions League. It's not obviously going to be the same teams every year. And you have, there's always going to be a competition for it because now we have a Real Madrid that's out. But it's going to be a lot more harder to win a World Cup, especially where you had to have that longevity. It requires a lot more patience and time and a lot more, ultimately, competition.
Yeah, Zeke, this is Julian on your take. I think I'm going to sell it, too. I could see if you were making the argument for Champions League having the better teams and better quality of soccer over the World Cup, because I think World Cup soccer and management is a little tougher with the short amount of time you have to prepare. But I definitely think winning the World Cup is harder. Basically, everything that Jacob said, even though it's only 4 years, there's a reason that only, like, a handful, I think only, like, seven teams have won the World Cup versus, like, lots of teams have won the Champions League. If you just get the right draw in the knockout stages, especially now in the new format where it's going to get easier to qualify for the knockout stages, I think the World Cup, having the sustained longevity and success, is super hard to do, and honestly remarkable that France were even able to break the World Cup winner's curse in 2022 when they made the final. So gonna have to sell it too. Gonna have to sell on this take as well.
All right, that will do it for this week's mailbag, because we have an action-packed week of sports news, but great stuff from all our fans sending in their takes. We have a lot more to draw from, and we want to hear from you. Drop us an email, DM us on a socials platform of your choice. Make it happen. We loved reading through these. We had a great time. We would love to talk about more in the future. All right, coming up next, we've got a whole series of quick hits. We're starting. David and Garrett are going to run us through their thoughts on Nico Harrison, who was in the headlines recently.
So Nico Harrison just gave his presser when was the last time he gave a press?
Are we including the closed recording roundtable he did a week ago? If not, it is the day after the trade. We played the Cavs on the road and literally no media was there.
God, sickening stuff from this guy. There was a recent quote that popped out about why should Nico not be fired? The question that I want to ask is why should he not be fired upon? Defense wins championships. I don't care. I don't give. You do not sell a man like Luka Doncic and expect to get away with it. Like, I fully agree with them.
You know, I maybe won't go that far, but a couple drinks, and yeah, you could probably convince me, David. that was straight criminal. Awful press conference again by Nico. He looks like a child who's getting scolded by his parents for getting an F on his report card or something. He looks nervous anytime he talks. This guy's a buffoon. We know it. The whole trade happened because Mark Cuban sold the team. We got in owners who have no idea about anything to do with basketball, and Nico got all the power. This is just awful all around.
Just a child really using his power to do absolutely
Nico,
absolutely inane.
Nico, if you see David on the streets of Dallas, you better turn the other way.
All right, that's enough of that. Powerful stuff from David and Garrett on that one. Jacob, there's been some baseball teams that you could say were passengers on the struggle bus. Any thoughts, any panic buttons that need to be hammered?
All right, so first of all, we're going to have to... Okay, the Royals are a little excused out of this rant, but there should be some panic buttons definitely thrown to the Braves and the Orioles, both sitting at 10 and 14. The Braves, fourth worst team in the NL. Like, I can't believe it anymore. Like, we were talking about them in the preview to say, like, they were going to compete against the Dodgers. I said, quote unquote, I would be shivering in my timbers, but I'm no longer shivering in my timbers. The Orioles, the third worst team in the AL. You're telling me the Athletics are better than this team? Like, okay, like, we're in 2025 and the Athletics are better. Like, come on, we got to lock in. Like, we lost 20 runs to the Reds. Ellie De La Cruz was running all over y'all. Like, we gotta, like, I know you guys can say anemic offense and injuries, but Ronald Acuna's gonna have to carry this team on his back if we want to see the Braves in the playoffs. The Orioles are gonna have to, like, fix their starting rotation. I don't know what they're gonna have to give to their guys. Whatever they gave to Dame, they gotta bring these guys back immediately. It's gonna be it's a rough start. It's good. They're both in, like, really tough conferences. They're both at the bottom of their divisions. So they're gonna have to bounce back really quick if they want to have any chance of making the playoffs.
All right, thank you, Jacob. Brandon, what's been going on in the NHL playoffs?
Some kind of crazy stuff, honestly. The Kings are up 2-0 on the Oilers. Shocking. Would not have guessed that ever. Minnesota is leading the Golden Knights 2-1. Once again, shocking. Would not have expected that. And then probably most surprisingly, Dallas is currently leading their series against the Avalanche while only having led, like, the score for 2 minutes over three games. That's crazy. Two overtime wins will get you that. But yeah.
All right. Thank you, Brandon. Julian, I fear we have some games to predict. Why don't you run us through it?
Absolutely. We're finishing the show up here today with predictions. We've got a soccer-themed one for the most part and then a little bit of... We've got... I don't know what happened there.
Sound cut out for a sec for me, yeah. Too, yeah.
So we've got, in our first matchup, the Champions League semifinals. We're just going to predict the tie over the course of both legs, not each individual leg. So first we've got Arsenal-PSG. I'll start it off. PSG have been my team from the get-go. I really think this is their year. It's a special team, a well-rounded team. Give me PSG. Chloe?
I will also be taking PSG. They're my pick to win it all right now. So I got to pick them here. Ian?
I will take PSG. I don't know that much about soccer, but I was at their stadium once this summer, and it was a great time. So, go PSG.
I will be taking Arsenal. I really identify with the Gooners.
I do not identify with Arsenal and the Gooners, but I'm still going to pick them, even though I would love for them to lose 10-0.
Give me PSG, the oil money. I know it's they're playing a lot better this year, even without Mbappe. I think they're going to surprise Arsenal. I think I have faith in them.
I don't know soccer, but I know PSG winning this one.
I would name my first kid after Ousmane Dembele, but I'm still going to take Arsenal in this one.
Okay. We've got next UCL matchup. Barcelona versus Inter should be pretty straightforward. I got Barcelona. They're the hottest team right now.
Barca's back, baby. Following Juju on this. Ian?
I don't remember, but I think they were my pick to win it all, so I'm going to ride with Barca.
As much as it pains me, I will support Spain through this. Barcelona.
I'm sticking with my team. Give me Inter.
Visca Barca. We're going to win. We're taking this home. I know Inter is probably like the tougher matchup, but we win in this one.
He's not a Barca fan, by the way. I don't know what he's
talking
about.
Can a white boy speak a little Spanish today? Give me Barcelona.
The streets remember me backing Barca a few weeks ago. I'm sticking with them.
I'm taking Barca.
Where are you going, Barcelona, eh? All right. Final. But out again. There we go. We're back. final prediction between Nuggets.
Predicting game four. Between juggernauts of
teams. There we go. I'm back again. We'll make it quick. I got the Clippers. I think Kawhi and Harden are rounding into form.
I'm also going to take the Clippers. They're home, and the Nuggets just don't have enough personnel.
I will stick with the Clippers. Game four was compelling. I have faith in Kawhi. Go Clippers.
I'll be taking the Nuggets. Jokic still hasn't had his supernova yet. I think this will be the game.
Kawhi and Harden are just too much for Jokic. Give me the Clippers.
God bless the French is what all I heard yesterday. Give me the Clippers.
Clippers may win the series, but the MVP is going to bounce back. I'll take the Nuggets.
I will take the Clippers for Kawhi.
The type of entertainment that's available in LA is clearly doing wonders for James Harden. Give me the Clippers.
And with that one, folks, why don't we finish the show? So thank you all so much to listening to this jam-packed episode of Against the Grain. You can listen to us every Saturday at 8 a.m. right here on KTRU 96.1 FM or stream all of our episodes anytime by searching for KTRU Sports on all platforms. Speaking of which, please go check out our interview with Rice legend Luke McCaffrey. We interviewed him this past week in preparation for the draft. He had a lot of interesting insight for us. It was great to catch up with an old friend. Go check that out again on all platforms, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Amazon Music. To stay in the loop, go ahead and follow us at ktrue.sports on Instagram and at ktruesports on TikTok. And you don't want to miss out on everything we've got going on here. If you have a question for the staff, please feel free to DM us on either of those platforms or drop a note to ktruesports at gmail.com. As you saw today, if you send us a question, we will answer it in a mailbag segment. That is, again, ktruesports@gmail.com, all lowercase. We want to know what you want to know so we can answer it on the air. Thank you so much for listening. See y'all next week.